Yesterday, I was scrolling through the news feed on my phone. You know, your phone somehow magically knows what articles you search for, and it provides articles that they think you might like. And so there's articles in my news feed around, you know, politics and gardening, maybe composting and cars and trucks and whatever. And then I saw this article pop up, just, you know, the headline, Choosing a Life Well Lived. Choosing a Life Well Lived. I had to look at that article, and it even started out a little bit like a sermon. Life is all about choices. We are required to make choices every day. Some choices seem small, carrying very little existential weight. Some choices, on the other hand, will fundamentally and even radically alter the course of our lives. Is it talking about choices? And I'm intrigued. And going on, the author says, I'm at a place in my life where I now choose change, capital C change, the jarring, transformative kind of change. I am inspired and excited to get outside and to live more nature-focused life, to simplify, to be my authentic self, and to walk away from unhealthy roles that I have felt societal pressure to play. And then I discover it's about somebody who's choosing to hike the Appalachian Trail. It wasn't a sermon. Well, it was a bit of a sermon, preaching, inviting all of us to get outside and make a choice, which in some ways goes with our theme this morning, choosing life, making this fundamental choice to live life-honoring ways and practices based on Deuteronomy and the Sermon on the Mount. These themes, these scriptures nudge us, call out to us to choose life. In the Old Testament, the people are right at the edge of the promised land, and Moses has this last sort of speech after renewing the covenant and offering to them the blessings of the covenant and the curses and building up. Here they are, ready for their grand hike across the Jordan. And Moses says to choose life. You have this choice in front of you. You have prosperity and life or adversity and death. Obey the commandments. Love the Lord your God. Walk in God's ways and you'll experience life. In some ways, that's what Jesus is doing on the Sermon on the Mount, calling out for this grassroots community that respect and honor life and relationships and are part of those who are committed to walk differently in the world, who reflect this reign of God and God's ways of life and peace and justice in the world, who live as salt and light in the midst of the violence, who are peacemakers and who hunger and thirst for righteousness and who mourn with others and who are merciful and are willing to suffer. This alternative way of living in the world that is in contrast to so much of what we see and feel around us. This morning we move into the heart of the Sermon on the Mount and we look at what has often been called the hard sayings of Jesus, because the call of Jesus goes beyond what is obvious and what comes maybe the easiest or the most naturally for us when we think about actions. This morning, what I want to suggest is that Jesus is talking about what's going on inside of us that leads to what goes on outside of us. Jesus is helping us look at what's happening in our hearts and our souls and our spirits, and knowing that that is what transpires when we go outside as well. As someone has said, a little play on words, the Sermon on the Mount here in this section takes us into the heart of the law. Into the heart of the law. Jesus is talking about what is going on inside as well as the actions that we express outside, bringing some harmony between our inner and outer lives. And so Jesus talks about anger and reconciliation and lust and divorce and truth-telling and using simple language when we talk with other people, letting our yes be yes and our no be no, known for what we say and how we honor the promises that we speak with our words. Look again at your heart. what's going on inside, and the pain inside, the hurt inside. And then you can sort of witness publicly with your life to the life that God invites us to choose. But these words also go outside. They have to do with our relationships and what's going on in our own small world around us, going the second mile, loving our enemies, keep working at reconciliation with those that, well, we don't see eye to eye with. Respect life, respect relationships, respect God's people around us. And we need these words of encouragement. We need this Deuteronomy word to choose life, because we live in a world that's surrounded by death and violence and adversity, struggle, conflict. We live in a culture that steals our life, that robs us of life, creates, well, fear and suspicion when we see other people, strangers, those who are different, and then we're tempted to just kind of hunker down and live our own lives and keep to ourselves and don't pay attention to no one but those desires in our hearts. St. Francis of Assisi is quoted as saying, if we want to own things, then we must also have weapons. And from ownership comes all the quarrels and battles that make love and life, we could say, impossible. And this, he went on to say, is why we in our Franciscan order refuse to own anything. Well, I dare say it comes as no surprise that we here today are among the owners of some things, a few things we own. And because we own them, well, we don't live completely at ease, and we don't embrace fully life. We live in a nation of owners, a nation of people who own a big share of the world's wealth. And so it doesn't come as any surprise then that we in our nation put extreme amounts of money into weapons to protect it all, to protect the things we own, and maybe to keep us safe and to keep our things safe. And so what was the number this week? 700 billion or so that we spend on national defense to protect our things and our stuff. The sum total of the next highest seven national military budgets all combined is what we spend in our country to protect our things. It's no wonder we're surrounded by a world of violence and death and adversity, struggle, endless wars. John Deere, this Jesuit Catholic scholar writing in his book, Disarming the Heart, who's talking about the violence in, just also names the violence that we're surrounded with, that we're living within, highlighting the spending on endless wars and highlighting abortion and torture and capital punishment and domestic violence of men against women and racism, how that kills and divides in our own country, and how even the television programming and movies promoting violence, portraying violent people as heroes who win by violence and are lifted up as admirable. Cartoons, toys, comic books, products for children advocating violence. It's pervasive. We're addicted to violence, he writes. So how in this world do we choose life? In a culture that can make us feel helpless, overwhelmed at the face of such pervasive violence, Jesus invites us into these life-affirming practices of paying attention to our relationships, to the people around us, telling the truth, reconciliation, forgiveness, living in harmony with our neighbors, with our friends. Jesus helping us maybe even look at the violence and the anger in our hearts, these stumbling blocks of a life of peace and compassion, like anger and lust. These are relationships. Jesus is, I think, saying that are gifts from God that can bring life and healing and joy, but can also be places of destruction and violence. These relationships matter to God. They matter to Jesus and how we treat our sisters and brothers and those closest to us, our spouses, our children. I was blessed and moved this week to read through Leland Sapp's article, The Body as a Temple Full of Many Gifts. It was included in the links that Alyssa sent around this week with our bulletin. In many ways, it was the practical expression of Richard Lichty's fine article on our bodies as good gifts from our Creator. Also well-written reminders that our bodies are gifts. And Leland Sapp's article, writing about some of his clients at Peaceful Living and caring and respecting for those who at first strike us as different and differently abled, as we might say, but how he was able to learn and how we can learn from each other. We aren't perfect. He goes on to say, we don't do things right and well all the time. We don't always remember flowers for Valentine's Day. We don't always say the right things in our relationships with others. We fail. And sometimes we need to be cared for and ministered by others because we're all differently abled. This morning, Jesus gives us another chance. We get another choice to choose life. To choose life that goes beyond the letter of the law, to nurture the relationships that we have, to move away from this narrative of violence and fear and suspicion, angry rants, and saying whatever first comes to our minds, to God's way of life. We say in our tradition that these words of the Sermon on the Mount are for all of our relationships, all of the time. This new kind of integrity that where our inner life and our outer life are in harmony. Our outward actions and words reflect our inner thoughts and attitudes. It starts on the inside, choosing life on the inside, but then being able to see this big picture of justice and compassion, mercy, forgiveness, reconciliation, and all these relationships. And so Jesus gives us a few specific examples. It's not enough just to say, well, don't murder, don't kill. No, Jesus says, don't even be angry. We get angry. We are among those who get upset, who are bothered by a few things. We get disturbed, but isn't that really where murder starts? Retaliation, revenge, don't let that retaliation, revenge fester too long, because sooner or later it comes out and it impacts the relationships around you. So really, if you're in church worshiping God and you think about a relationship that's not quite right, God doesn't really want to hear your prayers, Jesus says. Get away from the altar and go and work at some things. Practice reconciliation. Otherwise, it'll fester inside. It'll have destructive consequences for your lives and your soul. Somehow, we need to find a way to step away from that bitterness inside. If you're having your morning devotions or you're praying, God doesn't want to hear your prayers if there's something earthly in your relationships that isn't quite resolved. Don't come running to me, Jesus says. Don't even bother to pray about it. Go to the other and work it out. More important, maybe, than going to church or reading the Bible is our earthly relationships. Take care of those relationships, those tensions. They're connected with this experience and encounter with God. Clarence Jordan, an early civil rights pioneer, in his commentary on the Sermon on the Mount, writes that murder begins when one loses respect for the personality of the other, when one loses respect for the worth of the other. And maybe that's what Jesus is talking about here when he talks about insulting, right? Or calling people you fool or a name like that. It's like Clarence Jordan says, it's like a racial slur. It communicates disrespect. It implies that someone isn't worthy, is worthless, is below human. So pay attention to even those simple everyday words and labels that we put on other people. Well, we have those outbursts, but think about resolving them, reconciling them, keeping these relationships open and genuine, respectful. It's not enough just to refrain from murder, but how are we treating each other? The next two sections, Jesus talks about adultery and divorce, and he says it's not enough just to avoid these big matters, but be thoughtful and caring about those you're close to, your close relationships, and reminding us to control those reckless lusts that can run away and become self-serving and ultimately destroy the relationships that we have. Jesus invites us again to guard our thoughts and our hearts and our imaginations and to honor those closest to us, especially those in the first century who didn't have many rights, who had little value or social standing. Think about those who are vulnerable, the impact of your actions, making, well, our marriages, our homes, our churches safe places for vulnerable people, the wounded, maybe where stories can be heard, where the truth can be spoken in confidentiality and care and trust. Finally, Jesus speaking as well then about truth-telling and making oaths and swearing oaths and building on our promises, lots of lofty words to guarantee that, well, we'll fulfill those words that we speak. Use simple language. Yes, I will do that. No, I won't do that. Yes, I'll show up. No, I won't show up. Humble, clear speech. Say what you mean and mean what you say and live it. Keeping our promises in season and out of season, speaking truthfully in all of our speech and dealings with other people. Friends, these words that Jesus offers and even the big picture we read in Deuteronomy remind us that these relationships that God has given us are important. They matter to God. God is not just some distant deity, an unmoved mover off in the distance somewhere. God cares about the words we use with each other, our relationships, the people in our lives. God cares about the violence and hurt in our world as well, and even in our hearts, inviting us to an alternative way. And so, as someone suggested with this scripture this morning, ponder, for instance, first of all, one of your most meaningful relationships. What makes that most human relationship good? What is it that you appreciate about that relationship? Why is it important? And give God thanks for that relationship. Give God thanks for that person and for what they mean to you. Then, on the other hand, think about a relationship that isn't so good, a relationship that may be a bit frayed or damaged. You don't have to figure out who's to blame for the hurt, but offer that broken relationship as well to God. And maybe ponder what actions would be meaningful in mending, restoring some health to that relationship. Relationships matter to God. And we, friends, are invited to say yes to life and to choose life again and again. And so I close my sermon today with a poem. In her book, There Was No Path, So I Trod One, Edwina Gatley's poem, Called to Say Yes, reminds us that our Christian calling is to reject death and violence and to say life, say yes to life in its many forms. We are called to say yes, that the kingdom might break through to renew and to transform our dark and groping world. We stutter and we stammer to the lone God who calls and pleads a new Jerusalem in the bloodied Sinai Straits. We are called to say yes, that honeysuckle may twine and twist its smelly leaves over the graves of nuclear arms. We are called to say yes, that children might play on the soil of Vietnam, where the tanks belched blood and death. We are called to say yes, that black may sing with white and pledge peace and healing for the hatred of the past. We are called to say yes, so that nations might gather and dance one great movement for the joy of humankind. We are called to say yes, so that rich and poor embrace and become equal in their poverty through the silent tears that fall. We are called to say yes, that the whisper of our God might be heard through our sirens and the screams of our bombs. We are called to say yes to a God who still holds fast to the vision of the kingdom for a trembling world in pain. We are called to say yes to this God who reaches out and asks us to share his crazy dream of love. Friends, say yes. Say yes to choosing life, to choosing a life with this God of love. Amen.